Well, good morning, ladies. It's really great to be together with all of you this morning, and I know that we'll have some others trickling in. It seems to be the way class goes, even in the kids' classes. It kind of seems to be that way, and probably a pretty full room by before the end of the lesson. Let me introduce myself. There's a couple of people who may not know me. My name is Linda Vale. Been a member here for a long time. Was at another church for a little while, but here at Johnson Avenue for a total of about 35 years. And I'm usually have been teaching class during this series, so I've been missing the ladies' classes. But Stephanie got them recorded, and we're putting them on the website, and it's just really been an awesome thing to be able to go back and listen to them. So if any of you miss a class and want to go back, they're under online sermons, and then it will give you the ladies' Bible classes. So they are online, and they have just really touched my heart and my soul. The topic of this lesson, maturing for service to God and others, has just been really awesome. And spiritual maturity is not a matter of age. You don't age out and not have to continue to grow in spiritual maturity. Just like our bodies. I mean, it would be kind of nice if our bodies just stopped maturing at a certain spot and stayed there, but they don't. And so we need to continue to grow in our relationship with God and with each other. And we're so talented, or we're so blessed to have so many talented and spiritually minded women that have been leading these classes and leading our thoughts. And I really also appreciate the comments that I've heard from the ladies in the audience. And I appreciate that, and I'm counting on you today to do that as well. We are recording this class, so if you do have a comment, please speak up so that not only everyone in the room can hear, but also it's on the recording as well and can be heard. So today, if you don't have a book and you want one, I do have one up here, and it does have the lesson sheet in it. So I do hope that you've read the lesson sheet. There's a lot of information in there that we aren't going to really be able to cover. You can't cover all of that stuff in 45 minutes. So I have a little bit of a focus I'd like to kind of take us down today. But there's other information in there that's really, really good. So our lesson today is the challenge of servanthood. And maturing in all the ways that we mature and need to grow and mature. There's so many different ways, but servanthood is one of the ways also. We all recognize that people who are great servants and do a lot of service for other people, we consider them as being great. We think of these, if I said to you, think of somebody that you think is really great, you'd probably think about someone who has served, who serves others and helps others. And that's our viewpoint of it. If you go to a restaurant and you have a great dinner and you come home and you're telling somebody about it, I had a great dinner, the food was really good, but the waiter, the waitress gave us such good service, I gave her a double tip. Or I'm going back there because they really gave us great service. Oftentimes I've recommended a company or a business because they're great customer service. They'll help you out. They'll do what they need to do to make you happy and to help you with whatever you're using them for. Nordstrom's, probably most of us heard of Nordstrom's. It has a nationwide reputation of being the number one business or store and it's because of their customer service. Costco's kind of coming up in the end. They'll take back anything, they'll do anything, they'll exchange anything. But Nordstrom, for years, has always been known as number one for their customer service. So the worldly view of being a great servant is to provide power, position, and recognition of that greatness. And people are often given recognition, they're given awards, they're given special honors, things like that, for their great service. But Christians are also recognized by the world to be servants. And I'm sure each of us has considered ourselves to be a servant, because after all, we're Christians, right? And that's what we do. So I'd like to just kind of start today by asking ladies to kind of share with me, What are some of the things that, as Christian women, that we do? I mean, I know that all of you do serve others in ways. some in different ways than others. And so what are some of the things that you do as a Christian? We could focus maybe, most of the lesson is going to be focused on what we do for our church family. So what are some of the things that you do?
Danny, make meals.
Meals.
Yes, okay.
Okay.
Help coordinate like fellowship events.
Or coordinate.
Fill up.
My writing is really bad on the chalkboard.
Okay, coordinate fellowship.
We pray for others.
Pray for others.
I know, like, you and Rosie, you all come to my mind because you're so good at sending cards.
Okay. Send cards or notes. We have people that sometimes will fill out. We don't do it as often anymore, I don't think, that have been filling out those yellow cards. Just a little note to someone, letting them know what you appreciate. Danielle?
Spend time.
We celebrate with each other with good events and sometimes sad events, but we come together.
Okay. All right. Anything else we just want to add up? This is just kind of a random list. I know we do all kinds of things, but kind of a random list. Anything else you want to add up there for right now?
Teach classes.
Right. And one of the things about this is we have a lot of volunteers in the church, and they do things. I mean, when we come to church on Sunday mornings, the lights are on, the doors are unlocked, the Lord's Supper's ready for us, we have a preacher ready for us, and we have teachers ready for us, and all of that done is by people who are serving the church. So, anything else we want to add? Okay. So I want to take a few minutes and look at the example that we have of servitude from Jesus. He's the ultimate example. And so can you share with me some of the things that you recognize about Jesus' servitude, servanthood while he was on the earth?
He didn't just stick to his craft like his friends.
Okay, how can I say expanded? Expanded.
It wasn't like I'm just going to take care of my clique or my people. Like, his service had no boundaries.
He expanded his connections. Right, okay, good. I don't know exactly how to phrase that, but I think it gets point across good.
I think today we call it inclusion.
Inclusion? Okay, good.
That's the word.
Okay, all right. Grace.
He fed and healed people.
Okay.
Everybody, even the ones who didn't appreciate
it. Okay. It wasn't just those ones that he liked or who were following him sometimes. Sometimes it was someone who was just looking for something.
He prayed for others.
He prayed for others.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't ever concerned with his status, even though he was a king.
Okay. Not concerned. Okay. Meredith?
He held strong to what were God's words and God's principles. So he was gentle but firm. So, like, I think in this day and age, like, everybody expects you to, like, be super nice and sugarcoat things and say things a certain way. But Jesus had that gift to be able to be firm, but his approach was still loving, even though he was drawing hard lines.
Even against, he was loving even against those who disrespected him and persecuted him and things like that.
And I feel like love today means like you agree, you have to agree and accept everything. But I think he's a good example of he was loving, but that's not what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. Good.
He did not take the easy and convenient road.
The easy way. Okay, good. Lisa?
His servanthood usually took a path of taking the time to teach people.
Okay. Teaching them
about God.
Yeah, the most important thing about their life.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel?
I think something that, even, it could have gone on the left palm too, just lifting each other up.
Say that again?
Lifting people up.
Okay, encouraging, maybe. Encourage. And Jolene?
He had compassion.
Okay. All right, those are all great things that he did, and he lived a life of service. One of the main things he did is he came down to earth. He became a man to be down here with us, taking on the likeness of a human, knowing that our nature is sinful and selfish. But he came down and did it and served all through his life on this earth. And he also obeyed his Father in the ultimate sacrifice of giving his life so that others could be saved. That's the ultimate sacrifice. And we probably can't replicate, we can't replicate Jesus coming down and being God and coming down and taking on the likeness of humans or man and spending time on the earth. We can't replicate that. And we probably will never be called on to give our life up for someone else. The chances of that are pretty slim. But there was one really remarkable feat of service. Oh, I gave it away. I'm an F-E-A-T. Service that he performed. It was kind of a big deal in the scriptures, and we often think about an ultimate example of servants to others, or being a servant, and that was washing the feet of his disciples. And I want to talk a little bit about that today, because that doesn't always seem to be a really big deal to us. We know a little bit about it. And a lot of times in places it's replicated, and it's not really, it's a symbol. It's obviously a symbol. It's not really the big deal to wash one of our feet or wash each other's feet. But in those days, walking in sandals or barefoot on the dirt roads of Israel in that first century required the feet of guests to be washed before entering a home, and especially before a shared meal, since people, when they were eating, reclined down by the table and their feet were up near the table and the food. And you can imagine that walking on dirt roads all the time, on their feet, if either barefoot or sandals, their feet are going to be pretty dirty. The feet washing was usually done by the servants of the host, and it was considered a matter of hygiene, and it was assigned as the job for the most lowly of servants. When I used to get my kids to help around the house and do chores, it was like, okay, someone's got to clean the bathroom. And I want to do it. I don't want to do it. Who wants to do that? So it was looked upon as the most lowly job, the most lowly type of job. So in John 13, we read that on the night of his betrayal, they were at the Last Supper in the upper room. Jesus walked over and he picked up a towel and he picked up a basin and some water and he started to pour the water into the basin and wash the feet of the disciples and then use the towel to dry their feet. When the Lord stooped to this lowly task, the disciples were really stunned and they didn't know what he was doing. He was doing the work of the lowliest of servants, and he was he was the Son of God. Why was he washing their feet? And Peter even protested and said, no, Lord, you should never wash my feet. I won't let you wash my feet. Well, this great act of servitude that Christ, their Lord and Master, would wash their feet, it was really confusing to them. It was in direct contrast to what had been going on earlier. There's a couple of examples where the disciples were arguing about who was going to be greatest in the kingdom. And they were asking Jesus, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? And there was a discussion in Matthew 20 of a mom questioning which of her son's disciples, I think it was James and John, were going to be sitting at the right hand and the left hand of Jesus. So they were looking for worldly greatness, recognition of their greatness. And the humility expressed by his act, the towel and the basin, it foreshadowed the ultimate act of service of dying on the cross and to save others. But he told them when they protested and wanted to know what was going on. He said, but whosoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whosoever would be first among you must be the slave of all. What a huge lesson he was teaching his disciples. It wasn't really about just cleaning their feet. It was about the humble act of lowering yourselves to do the lowliest of jobs to serve others. Because they went to this upper room, and obviously they didn't wash each other's feet, as far as we know. Nobody washed their feet when they came in. And Jesus took that need on to take care of that. You see, Jesus did not come into this world for his personal benefit. He served others throughout his entire life. There's our evidence. We've seen that. So now the end of the story, one of his last remarks about that. After Jesus washed the disciples' feet, he told them, I have given you an example that you should do as I have done. That's in John 13:15. So for us today, washing feet is symbolic of our role in service as the body of Christ and as Christ followers. As his followers, we are to imitate him, serving one another in lowliness of heart and mind and seeking to build one another up in humility and love. So Jesus, and this, I'm so glad you guys brought this out, because my notes talk about Jesus came to the earth. He got involved with mankind. He got involved with everybody. And he knew, he got involved and he understood their needs. And he helped their needs. And he gave great personal sacrifice to be able to help the needs. Some of the simpler needs, like praying for people or healing people or feeding people. And some of the hardest need of giving them everlasting life by giving his life on the cross. So we all understand that we've been called to serve in the church. We've been called to serve in our homes, and we've been called to serve in the community. So just another reminder, if you haven't read through the lesson book, I'd really encourage you to pull the lesson out and just read it. It's a 5-minute read, and it talks about places that you can serve and things that you can do and how important all of that is. But in the interest of time this morning, I'd like for us to focus on ways we can help serve our church family. So, in Galatians 6:10, it says, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially unto those who are of the household of faith. So like we said, we have obligations to do good to everyone, but especially to those of the household of faith. And in Romans 12:10, it says, love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. So it's just kind of a reminder that sometimes we can get really wrapped up in serving others and maybe neglecting some of the members of the church or the church family who may have needs. I find myself getting involved in the community things, getting involved in family things, and sometimes I go, I need to make time for my church family. So, so if washing feet is symbolic, what are some of the ways that we can serve others? That's probably more like not the easy stuff. Washing feet is hard stuff. It's dirty, it's hard, it's humbling, and service is not always easy. It's not always convenient. Sometimes it's very time consuming, and it doesn't always just fall in our lap that somebody comes up or stands up in front of the church and says, so-and-so needs something, so-and-so needs prayer, so-and-so needs meals. We don't always know. Some people don't come and tell us. So we need to look around and find out how we can serve others and how we can find out their needs. And one of the really, really good ways that we can do that is spending our time. And so I'd like to just ask you for some ideas. How can we reach out? How can we reach out and serve members of the church in a little bit different ways, maybe, than just praying for them when it's told to us from the pulpit that they need prayers, or sending cards and notes? Those are important, and I'm not trying to belittle them. But sometimes there's needs that we don't know about because we don't know all of our brothers and sisters. So does anybody want to kind of add to this list about some of the things that are maybe a little harder sometimes?
I think maybe making phone calls or connecting with people who missed service, especially Sunday morning, just making sure if they need anything, if they would like communion, or if they need prayers, or they want to visit, or they need meals, whatever, but a phone call to people who missed service. I think that says a lot, that you care and you noticed that they weren't there.
Huh?
I think even going out to lunch sometimes with people after church, just to get to know them better, and that way they can open up and you can have more of a conversation than here at church just saying, hi, how are you? Then we're able to have more.
Yeah. Danielle?
I think, on the flip side of that, we have to be open to, instead of answering, I'm fine, we have to share what's actually going on. I think living in Mexico, I have a different perspective. They're so brutally honest that you are almost shocked when you go to their house and visit them. They tell you exactly what's going on in front of their, you're hearing all these horrible things and their kids in there and you're going, because we don't do that. We're the opposite. We don't want to tell anybody. But what happens behind closed doors, this society is really bad about that. And I think we carry it into church instead of, when someone takes the time to ask you, how are you? You actually say, I'm good, but here's what's going on. And then they can know where to help you or that you do need prayers or whatever it is. So I think we kind of have to go both, those go hand in hand. We have to spend time and find out what people, we also have to be the people that are sharing what's going on with us so that we can all do this together instead of I can't beat it out of you, so.
There's a lot of people that aren't willing to do that or think that they might think that they don't need the help or they don't want to bother anybody. But yeah, you're exactly right. When we do need help, we need to ask our family because they're going to help us. And one of the things I found in talking to ladies is they say, just let me know. How do I know? How do I know? Let me know. Will you tell me if somebody needs help? Because I don't always know it. And we don't always share it. Or get a couple of friends together and say, hey, we have a sister who has a need. Let's help her. Let's help her together. Something like that. The disconnectedness. That connecting is such an important word. And that's kind of one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about. I think maybe it's just me, but I'm hoping it's not me. over the years, we've been at this congregation for a total of 35 years. And we've known people, we've had kids together, we've raised kids together, we've lost parents together. We've been through a lot together. But there have been times in our life that Keith and I, we find ourselves feeling disconnected. And if we were feeling that within our personal family, we'd do something bad. I don't think we'd go for very long if we hadn't, we were feeling like, well, you know, I haven't talked to my mom in a long time, or my sister doesn't call me, and, you know, what's going on? But, so, if you would, have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt kind of disconnected, that you're kind of drawing away? And, you know, if you have, raise your hand. I don't want to be the only one. I think we all have. And it's hard because you get down, like Danielle said, you kind of withdraw. You don't tell people. You think it's you, and, you know, you don't really understand what's going on. And one of the things that Keith and I have done, when, you know, sometimes when he's up, I'm down. When he's down, I'm up, and kind of help each other. We say to ourselves, we need to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, an old saying. And we try to make the first move. We open the directory and find a family and say, you know, this family is new here, or this family, you know, haven't seen this family, and invite them over for dinner. And even after you've just done the invitation, you start to feel better. You feel more connected. But then when you have that family in your home and you talk and you learn more about them and you learn about what their kids are doing and what their family's doing, you start to have that connectedness again. And it really makes you feel better. And then on top of that, you've done a service. You've reached out to somebody else who may or may not be feeling that same disconnect. If you're feeling it, the odds are somebody else is feeling it too. And so I say that, and on top of all of that, COVID. Oh, my goodness. COVID just changed so many things a lot. I want to read something that I pulled off the internet about COVID and the impact on the church mainly. It did a lot of damage to our church community and to all church communities. All churches are struggling to get their families back, to get their people back, and get their people in gear and about doing the things that they were doing. They're all having trouble doing that. The pandemic may be settling down, but the aftermath continues. Some people have still not returned for in-person worship. It's difficult to determine who still belongs here and who's moved on. We still don't know if some people will ever return. The rate of restlessness is at an all-time high, and people are now battling the unnerving realities that have been left behind by COVID. In the midst of all this chaos from COVID is the reality that life and its challenges continued during the quarantine and isolation. And as we recover from the isolation and quarantine, people have very real sorrows and issues that have built up and accumulated during this dark season. And I think it's just something we want to remember. It hit some people harder than others. I know we talked to some of the ladies who are kind of homebound and who can't come out to services, and the loneliness. And I talked to a sister just the other day who's with us at services, and she told me that she lost her spouse not very many years ago, and how this last couple of years she has been so lonely. So lonely. And I'm sure all of you felt lonely. You didn't get to see your friends and your families. You didn't get to do the things you routinely did. People didn't want to be close to you. Just all kinds of things. So I just want to encourage you that, you know, try to help with that disconnectedness and see what we can do to help with that. And I'd also ask, do you know all of the members here? When you look around on Sunday morning, are there members here that you've never talked to, or you've never met, or you've never went and introduced yourself to? That's a reality. And this is not a really big church, but that is a reality, that there are members here who don't know each other, have never been introduced to each other. And I know that many of us are shy. Many of us don't know what to say. But if everyone tries to take that first step, how wonderful would it be? And how wonderful would it be instead of staying in your chair and, you know, talking to the neighbor that you talk to and sit by every week and go out and say, I haven't met that lady. I want to go see her. Or I haven't talked to that sister in a long time. I want to go talk to her. These take us out of our comfort zone. And that's what I say. Sometimes it's our time commitment. It's not always easy. It's hard to take that first step out of our comfort zone sometimes. But we need to get involved personally. And I love, Jolene, are you the one that said phone calls?
No.
Who said phone calls? I love that because we're a society of texts and emails. And I enjoy getting a text. But a personal phone call is awesome. A personal phone call is just awesome. Pick up the phone. Call someone that's different and that it's not the usual person you'd call, your friends or family, and just, I was thinking about you today. How are you? I missed you on Sunday. Like Paul said. Did you say phone calls? Maybe, okay, he said phone calls. Get engaged in their lives. And that's when you will find out about them. You will find out about who they are, if they have needs, because unless people tell us, we don't know. And I know all of you want to serve, and all of you want to help people. But if people don't tell us, we don't know. And they're not always going to come out and have an announcement read or call somebody and say, Sister So-and-so, I need prayers for my family, or I need this, and I need someone to take me to the doctor next week. And unless we get personally involved. So imagine if each one of us in this room, I didn't count how many sisters we have in here today, if each one of us committed to making one phone call or visit to someone next week, not a text or an email, but a personal connection, if they did it once a week, how many people would be touched? So if we have 35 ladies in here, and everyone made one phone call to a sister or a brother, sometimes it can be a teenager. Teenagers love hearing from us. How many people? That's 35. That is about a third of our membership here. 70.
Danny's going to know.
Oh, Danny.
I'm like,
oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I don't want to interrupt you either. I feel like the intention is always there. The intention is, oh, I need to call that person. Or, oh, but sometimes it's hard to get over that initial, oh, how are you doing? Good. Okay. And then, like, where do you go from there? And so I think having tools in the sense of how you might approach a conversation or what you might say to somebody that you haven't seen in a while, or going over to somebody to say hi or introduce yourself that you've been seeing for months and months is weird. It's awkward.
It is.
It's
and
awkward.
That's what I'm saying. It's out of our comfort zone.
Because you're like, I know you, but I don't know you. And I'm really sorry I haven't gone over to you, but it's just, and so getting the tools to be able to say, I am really sorry. I've been seeing you for the last months, few months, and I haven't gotten your name. Or ask a friend. Maybe you can introduce me.
Have you ever gone up to somebody and introduced yourself and said, are you visiting? And they said, oh, no, I'm a member here.
And then
you feel horrible.
Well, how do you feel? Yeah. In that position.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'll tell you a secret that I've heard.
Yes, tell me
okay?
your secrets.
We all like to talk about ourselves, right? We all like to talk about ourselves. So ask questions.
And one good question, Billy, this is Billy's, I love it, because usually the first question is, oh, how are you doing? And everyone says, good. He always asks, what did you do today?
Exactly. Good. Did you do anything fun this last week?
All you're trying to do is find that connection of interest that then you can grow off of, because they can say, oh, we had a full conversation about the dentist the other day.
Exactly.
And we were able to hold the whole conversation because it was like, what did you do today? Oh, we went, and so yeah. It's more of open-ended questions, but knowing that could be a... Your go-to question.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do today? Or mm-hmm. do you have any plans this weekend? And trying to open up those doors. And so
that's
that was
great.
When you were talking, that was what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Being able to have those tools.
Yeah, it's out of our comfort zone. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard just to find the time. We get busy with our lives. And so that's kind of what I'm talking about today. We do the stuff that we find is pretty easy. And sometimes a special need comes and we dive in and we help. But... think about, get out of your comfort zone a little bit. Grace.
You can also tag team. You don't have to do this by yourself. Because I know that there are some people who are like, yeah, I don't know how to talk or hold a conversation. But then you may have another friend or a sister who's better at that. And if you have a couple of people together, that might help to encourage more conversation. It doesn't feel as awkward. That's one technique.
Mm-hmm.
Another technique is go to lunch. It is hard on the phone, but if you go to lunch, you're kind of like looking at each other, and you're going to be eating together. And so
mm-hmm.
maybe a little easier to open up a conversation.
It's relaxing. When you have
yeah.
a conversation over a meal, it's more relaxing. Or even just go visit them. Jennifer.
I may not be speaking for everyone, but for my age and town, I actually hate phone calls and wouldn't love to receive a phone call. Texts are so much nicer. Like, I don't know, just phone calls. But they're, like, speaking as a newer person. Like, there's a ton of people I don't know. Coming up and introducing yourself and talking, like, it means a lot. Because I don't know who's new and I don't know who's been here forever. So, like, introductions at church are really nice.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you very much for sharing that. Meredith and
I
Jillian.
I think one thing is like knowing your strength and like what's your growth point. Because like Lily and James are really good at this. They asked us to lunch like when we first came here and I'm like, lunch with strangers? Like that is like super intimidating. But like that's not ever something I'm gonna do. That's not gonna be my talent. But it wasn't. It was not awkward. It was great. And I got to know them that way when we first But I know that's not what I'm gonna do, right? So like, knowing what I can connect, and then like, what's the next step? Like, baby steps. We don't all have to like go make a phone call or ask someone to lunch if that's super intimidating. But like, what are you working towards? Like, what's your next step?
I'm gonna help you with that when we have to handle the little
paper at the end. Save that for the last.
Jolene,
I think we need to foster celebration as a group. You all come type thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know of a congregation that whenever there is a baptism, which is actually the greatest moment in a human being's life, they have a potluck and a big celebration the next week. And it's a great time. It is a happy party. They are celebrating that there has been a child of God added. And everybody goes. And kids see this. Old people.
That's awesome.
One of the best memories I have, I grew up at the Oklahoma Boulevard Church. It was a big church. Every month at 6th and Laurel, we had a picnic. And as a little child, I could sit and talk to old ladies like me. And they were a big part of my life. I still have the cards they gave my mother for the baby shower they gave for her. I mean, we're talking a long time ago. And we don't foster big group celebration. It's great to go to lunch with somebody one-on-one or four of you, but 80, 100, and you can visit around, you can talk to the little kids.
And imagine how a new convert would feel. That's an awesome thing. I've never even heard of that, Jolene. I mean, it's just an awesome thought.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing to do, and everybody is so happy. When we have the Thanksgiving gathering, look at the turnouts we get. For some people, that is their Thanksgiving. But they bring other people and friends. And we are social beings, and Christ was a social being. And we need to do that. It doesn't have to always be here a couple of times a week, on and by,
mm-hmm.
because I will never get to know the children or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I might, because I'm a wordy-gurdy, but, you know, Others may not.
But even celebrating at the moment when they come out
yes.
of the baptistry and come here, there are times that there's lots of people, and then there's times when there's only a few people that go up and congratulate that person, hug that person, and celebrate with that person. And so keep that in your mind when those events occur. What am I doing? And I'm as guilty as the rest of you. I'm not indicting anybody. We're looking for tools. We're looking for ways to reach out, and that's what I'm trying to say. You know, sometimes there's lots of people, and sometimes there's just a few people. But what a celebration, and we really need to make that a priority celebration. I like your idea.
That's such an emotional time and moment in their lives, and people remember the way you treat them and the way you make them feel.
Yes.
And I think that emotional coming out of the waters of baptismal and then being able to stand there and have complete strangers hug you and say congratulations and be in that that moment with you, I think is something that I vividly remember who was at my baptism.
And what a way to bring them into the family. We're all celebrating. We're having a celebration because you've made this choice. And it shows, and it reminds me of a quote, a famous quote from Theodore Roosevelt. It says, "No one cares how much you know until they know how much you care." And that is how converts, or even people we're teaching, they don't care how much you know about the Bible unless they know how much you care about their soul and you care about them and establish a relationship with them. It's really important. Meredith, did you have, or Jen, you haven't talked yet. Come on.
Something, when Jolene was sharing that about the potluck or the gathering and saying she remembers it as a child, I think that sometimes our ability to make these connections start at young ages. And so when we were talking about visiting people, I just wanted to encourage anybody that has children and grandchildren to take them along with you, because it means so much. Natasha and Mario brought Mateo over to have dinner with Sarah, and Sarah talked about it for weeks. On Saturday, I had the Ledbetter boys, and I brought them up to see my in-laws. And my mother-in-law at this point doesn't speak in coherent sentences, but it meant she loved it. She sat there, and I had saw smiles I hadn't seen in months. My father-in-law didn't know them. He was sitting there and cuddling the boys. But at the same time, because they've been in nursing homes a lot with their own parents, they were comfortable there too.
Mm-hmm.
Because nursing homes can be really scary, especially for kids. But they go visit their own grandfather. And so even when Susie's saying incoherent things to them, they just smiled and they let them hug them. And so I think it kind of works both ways when we're getting our children involved. It benefits those that we're going to see, and it benefits the children because it gives them some of those skills and tools at a young age.
So
just seeing their joy at seeing these little boys who they don't remember that they knew them here.
Yeah, what fun they had at a visit. It was a fun visit. Yeah, so real quick, since Lily isn't in class today, I can use her as an example. A number of weeks ago, she went over and paid a visit. She took her kids over to visit Carol Crawford. Now, you have to understand, Lily does not know Carol Crawford. She just knows Carol Crawford can't come to church. She's got a lot of health issues, and she went over there. She came back, and she was amazed. She says, "She was so fun. The kids had such a good time. She was giving them cookies, and they were talking to her." And she says, "She is such a hoot. She has a great sense of humor, Carol. She just keeps you laughing. She's really positive and up." And she was just, it was just such a eye-opening experience for her to go to somebody's house that she didn't even know, be so welcomed in, and learn about Carol, learn who she was, how she'd been a member of a church like most of her life, if not all of her life, and you know, her family, and you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So, and what an example for children. Yeah, good. Okay, Meredith, hold on. Daniel, did you still have a comment?
I was just gonna say, what theme we're all touching on is community. You can blame it on COVID, but it's happening long before that. We're all wanting community and to feel like we belong somewhere.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, you're exactly right. It was becoming more prevalent before COVID. And I think it's a probably kind of a generational thing or something, because, you know, I look at my life now and my daughter's life, and when I was her age, my life was not quite as busy as it is now and as hers is. And, you know, everyone, the young moms who stayed home with kids could do a lot of stuff, but now a lot of them work. And you know, life is just different. Life is just different. What I want to encourage you is don't forget the important things. Just like when you're raising kids, life's different now, but there's still important things you need to teach your kids and do with your kids that are important, no matter how life is different. Did you have a comment, Joyce? I'm sorry. So I want to get through the very end of my lesson really quick. There's not that much, but... So service is not always easy. It's not always convenient. It gets dirty and humbling, and you go, you call somebody, and you find out they have needs, and it might require you to do some work. And sometimes that's why we don't call people, because what is it going to entail? What am I going to have to do? But it often just doesn't fall in our lap. It's not just told what we need, some things that we need to do, but we need to look around and find out how we can serve others. Remember, service is a sacrifice. And a sacrifice is an act of giving up something you value for the sake of someone or something else that you regard as more important or worthy. As Christians, that's our job. We look around at our homes and we see chores that need to be done. And as women, we pretty much know that unless we do them or have somebody else engage somebody else to do them for us, they're not going to get done. And that's kind of how service is in the church. But I want you to know that being a servant brings great rewards. It brings happiness and satisfaction to your life. It changes your outlook on life, your attitude, your life. These are things that I'm not making up. It was in our lesson book. So through service to others, relationships are made and relationships are enhanced. With the right attitude, being a servant is the key to your happiness. The greatest leaders in the church are those, not those with high positions or positions of authority, but those who are willing to serve for the good and encouragement of others. And leadership is best defined as servanthood. Remember, we've not come into this world for our personal benefit. We are here to serve. So at the very end of the story, Jesus says, "If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." And we have a servant's heart. When we have a servant's heart, the Lord promised that we would be greatly blessed. So, as we come to the end of the class, I have a challenge for you. And our challenge in this class is growing and maturing in servanthood. I'm not asking anything great, and this is free will, do what you can, what you can't. Some of us can't do anything other right, or more right now. But on this page that for you to take home, just a little self-reflection to sit and do in a quiet moment, maybe with a cup of coffee in the morning. Make a list of the things that you currently do to serve the church right now. Think back in the last month or so. What have you done to serve the church? And then there's a little article, a part of the lesson in the lesson sheet about our attitude about being a servant. And I just put that in here. Think about our attitude and little checkoff boxes. Do we have these attitudes? Do we have the correct attitude about being a servant? And then I have some scriptures about what God says about being a servant. How the greatest people are the ones who serve the most, and that they will be the greatest. And my challenge for you is to do one better thing this week. One better thing. I know you all do things. And think of one more, one better thing that you can do this week. And see if it changes you. See if it has an impact and changes someone else that you've served. And then, if it does, maybe you will be impelled or compelled to do it again next week. And like I said, if each of us in this room do one better thing each week, imagine the impact on this church and these church families and the connectedness. And get out of your comfort zone. Make it somebody that you don't know. Make it somebody you haven't talked to. Make it somebody you missed at church. And find out, you know, why was somebody sick, you know. Danny, you were sick or gone for a couple of weeks, and I was getting worried, but found out, well, you had sick kids, and you were on vacation, and vacation, well, good. I'm glad you got to go on vacation. But I didn't know that. And, you know, so that's my challenge to you. And I hope that you'll at least consider it and think about it. And if you need, you know, think about tools. If you want some tools, talk to people that you know. You look around. You know there's people that are really good at that. And ask them, what do? What do you say? What do you ask? And remember, ask questions. People like to talk about themselves. And ask them some questions. That's all I have. Any comments for the good of the class here? Okay, sorry, Stephanie.
I was going to say, as I listen to everything, all of this is so great. But I think also we have to be so genuine with this, because that phone call doesn't mean anything if it's just to say, where were you on Sunday, right?
Yes, like, exactly.
There has to be that genuine, I care about
care.
You. And if you can't, if you're not showing that, then you're just checking off books.
Right. No one's going to care about us unless they know that we care about them. And yeah, and that's a really good point, because it's important for them to know that you really want to find out about them. You want to find out, how was your week? How are you doing in the heat? You know, that's my question. How are you doing in the heat? So, thank you. Okay. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Oh, I see.
Okay.